Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being back for another night. We are in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 through 9. We are going to go back into chapter 11 and read those last verses because I've put together a family tree on the very front page, as you can see, that shows you starting with the line of Shem going down to Abraham and all the people that are going to come from there. Abraham is going to be given the promise tonight. He's going to be called out of Ur, and he's going to be told he's going to become a nation. He's going to be given land. He's going to have a great name. And if you can see just real quickly, looking at that chart, that family tree, you can see that circle. It says Israel. That is the 12 tribes of Jacob right there. That becomes the nation of Israel. But Jacob's brother Esau, you can see how Esau ends up having three wives, and those people that are circled there is called Edom. They're going to be listed in the book of Genesis as the lineage of Esau, and they're going to be called the kings or the chiefs of the land of Edom, which is, again, south of Israel. Going up to the right there, underneath Abraham and Hagar and Ishmael, you've got a circle there of the Ishmaelites. Those are the nation that become the Ishmaelites, or the Arabs that move in Saudi Arabia down in the south, the peninsula. Abram's going to have a third wife, Sarah, Hagar, and Keturah, after Sarah dies. And he's going to have several sons that he sends to the east, and one of them is named Midian, and that becomes the Midianites. They invade Israel during the days of Gideon. And then you go back over to the left side of that chart, and Abram's brother Haran, who died early, had a son named Lot. And Lot, of course, is the father of Moab and Ammon. And that becomes the land of the Moabites and the Ammonites that are just right across the Dead Sea. So Moab, Ammon, and Edom, that is all the land of Jordan today. And anyway, that's just the fulfillment of those promises of Abraham having a great name and having many descendants, and we'll refer to that again later. But if you follow that down, you can see Shem, Arpachshad, just going right down the lineage that we used to have up here, to Shelah, Eber, Peleg, Reu, Sereg, Nahor, and then Terah. And Terah has those three sons, Haran, Nahor, and Abram. He also has a daughter through a different wife named Sarah that Abram's going to marry, his half-sister. So Terah and Abraham's mother are not the father and mother of Sarah, but Terah is the father of Abraham's wife, Sarah, through another woman. That's who he's going to marry. And then there's Nahor and Haran. So I'll just read this, that these verses, chapter 11, verse 27 through 32, and it's just like this jumbled mumble of names. But on this chart, it all kind of makes sense. This is the account of Terah, again, the Toledot. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And there you can see in the gray box across the top, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. And there you can see right there, he's got a son named Lot. Now Lot is, after Haran dies, it's going to be assumed that Abram, in a sense, kind of adopts him, kind of brings him in as his son. At least he travels with Uncle Abraham. But it appears that he's kind of got him as a member of the family. It doesn't say specifically that Abram adopted him, but he does start living with Abram. And when Abram leaves the family, Lot goes with him. And Haran became the father of Lot. While his father Terah was still alive, Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans. And again, I've got a map on the back of your notes right there. And I'm gonna make a commitment, not that I want to start an argument or become heretical, but I'm going to make a commitment that Abram's home country, and I'm going to show you some more verses tonight, I refer to it again, is in the land of the north there. It is in Aram. It is up there by Haran, because that's where Isaac is sent, or his servant is sent to find a wife for Isaac, back to Abraham's people. That's where Jacob goes to live with his uncle Laban. They never go down south. And so I think, now again, it's hard to say that because all of our Bibles in the back have a map of Ur being in Sumer or Akkadian down by the Persian Gulf. And that's based on archaeology and some things. And it's kind of become the accepted practice. But if you set that aside and read the text of Scripture, it sure seems like this is the land of Abraham's country, his people, his family. Again, it doesn't change the story. It doesn't change the Scriptures. We're just changing the location on a map of where it's at. And I think it flows better with the biblical account. So, you know, don't get mad at me, but you can certainly disagree with me. You can certainly say, I don't agree with that, and I'd be fine with that too. I'm almost scared to say I think it's in the land of the north instead of the south because, you know, who wants to, you know, got enough problems in life besides starting arguments about where Ur was at. But nonetheless, he died in the land of Ur. It says, and going back to chapter 11, verse 29, and oh, I will point this out. Now, if you look on that right there, when there's many references in the Bible that says it was on the other side of the Euphrates. It was in the land of Mesopotamia. Now listen, if you look on the map, Haran and Ur are both where? On the other side of the Euphrates. And the Mesopotamia means the land between the rivers, between the Tigris and Euphrates River. And so Ur and Haran are in the land between the rivers. They're in Mesopotamia. So there's really... again, if someone comes up with an absolute slam dunk, well, we got to go down into, you know, Sumer and say that's where Ur's at. But everything that we say about Ur in the south, it fits in the north, especially when you start going up there to meet Abram's family. Okay, going back to chapter 11, verse 29, Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. And the wife of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran. So if you look on that chart, Nahor, the middle son, I think they're born. I think the order of their birth is Haran, Nahor, and Abraham. Abraham is mentioned first, just like Shem is mentioned first, because Shem is the son, the main son, that's going to receive the promise. But like Jacob and Esau, the oldest son is Esau, but Jacob, the second son, receives the promise. Ephraim and Manasseh, the older son is bypassed, and Jacob blesses the second son to receive the promise of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so I think Haran, again, you can discuss this, argue, it's just part of Bible study. It doesn't change doctrine. But Haran, Nahor, and Abram, I think, is the order of their birth. But of course, Abram's going to be mentioned first because he is who's the story's about. So anyway, Nahor marries Haran's daughter Milcah, which would be Lot's sister, and they're going to stay up there in Paddan Aram. They are not leaving. Nahor's going to stay, his daughter Milcah is going to stay, and they're going to have some sons that are mentioned later in the book of Genesis when it becomes pertinent. Huz, Buz, it goes through the whole Hesed, Hazo, and finally one named Bethuel. And that's the one that's underlined because that's what's going to be important in our story. Bethuel's going to have two children that are listed. One is going to be Laban, Uncle Laban, and his daughter Rebekah. Now Rebekah is going to be the one that Abraham's servant Eliezer goes up and brings back Rebekah to marry Isaac. And you can see right there, they get married, and they have two sons, Jacob and Esau. The oldest son, they're twins, but the first one born was Esau, but Jacob is the one that receives the blessing. Now, when it comes time for Jacob to find a wife, he himself, well, actually, yeah, find a wife, but he's in trouble. He's been lying and cheating and stealing, and he's in trouble, so he's a fugitive in a sense. And he flees and goes back up to live in Paddan Aram and goes to Uncle Laban. You see, or his mom, Rebekah's brother, Laban. He goes and lives with Uncle Laban, and he wants to marry Rachel. So he works 7 years for Rachel, but then, of course, Laban, who cheats the cheat, gives him Leah, the oldest daughter, and then says, you can work for 7 more years, and you can have them both. So he's got to work 14 years for Laban, and then they get into a childbearing contest, which wife could have the most sons. Rachel doesn't have any children. You see they're numbered. 1, 2, 3, 4. Leah has the first four sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. So there's your order of the tribes of Israel. Who's born first? Who should be the kingly tribe? Reuben. But Reuben is going to end up, well, we'll get to that story later. He ends up sleeping with one of his father's concubines, and he loses the blessing. And eventually, Judah ends up getting the kingship. But anyway, then you can see after Judah, then Rachel's not having any children, so she gives her handmaiden to Jacob and says, here, she'll produce children and they'll be my children so that I can get in this competition. And so Bilhah has Dan and Naphtali. Well, as soon as Rachel makes that move and Rachel starts having children on a substitute wife, Leah says, hey, I can play that game. Here's my handmaiden, Zilpah. And Zilpah then has number 7 and 8, Gad and Asher. And then Leah ends up having 9 and 10, Issachar and Zebulun. And then finally, Rachel has a son named Joseph, and then the final son, Benjamin, and she dies giving birth to Benjamin. And now Joseph, you spin off that foul Joseph down, he marries the daughter of one of the priests in Egypt. We're way ahead of the story. The priest of On, and produces two children, Manasseh and Ephraim. And upon his deathbed, Jacob ends up adopting Manasseh and Ephraim as two of his sons, and they're the ones that are going to receive, in a sense, his inheritance or the blessing. And that's why you see Israel's often called Ephraim, because they're the ones that replaced Ephraim. Anyway, that's that genealogy, and you can follow up, and you can see Abram married Sarah. Sarah has Isaac. Isaac has Jacob and Esau, and Esau has, you know, the three wives over there. And interesting, if you just want to look at this, Esau marries two Hittites, and that's why Rebekah wants Jacob not to marry a Canaanite or a Hittite, so she sends him back home to get a wife. He comes back with four. But notice who Esau married. Now on this list, all capital letters, that's the men, the males. They're all capital letters. The women, to help you make a distinction, they start with a capital letter, but then they got, you know, small letters, if you can see what I'm talking about. And so Ishmael's got all these sons, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, it looks like. I just counted quick. And that bottom one is a girl, M-A-H-A-L-A-T-H, Maheleth. I think it means sweet smell or sweet perfume or sweet odor. I think it's what it means. Anyway, notice who marries her. Rebekah and Isaac's son Esau marries Ishmael's daughter and then has those children, a son, and then grandsons through that. So that's interesting. We could talk about that. But nonetheless, that's there kind of explaining this chapter. And so I'm going back to read this. Verse 30, now Sarah was barren and she had no children. And that's really going to be a problem in our story because Abram's being called and he's going to become a great nation and he's got nothing. It's not like he's got 12 sons and they're going to become a great nation. This promise is not manifesting that phase of it. Verse 31, Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarah. Again, that's interesting. It's called daughter-in-law since she is his daughter, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. So you've got, again, you can see on the map on the back page there, they're going to leave Ur, and they set out and they stop in Haran. They've got they've got cattle, they've got possessions, and so they're probably not necessarily city dwellers. They probably live around in the community, in the rural area. And so they migrate down around Haran, and they spend time there 5 years. Terah dies, and that's where Abraham then is going to up and move and follow that gray line on the bottom page, going back down, following that line down through Dan, Hazor, Megiddo. And it's going to stop at Shechem, Bethel, and Ai, and that's coming up here in some of the verses that I wanted to get to tonight, but I don't think we're going to get there like that. And it's going to end up settling in the Negev, and that's where there's a drought, and he ends up going into Egypt, and that's where the story will continue. But anyway, let's go ahead and read. I'll just read chapter 12, verse 1, and then we'll start breaking this down and look at several things. the Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, your father's household. And that's three, from the big to the very specific. Leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's family. And all that, and we'll talk about it again, all that is connected back to what happened in chapter 11 at the Tower of Babel, where everyone had a united language and they were building the Tower of Babel. God says, this is going to mess up the plan. And so he scattered them. The people went to their own groups, to their own territories, had their own languages and lived. And Abram has gone to his territory, has a language, has a country, has a family. And God says, okay, now we're going to get, I believe it's very precise. I think it's very clear. God's now going to, after he's got everybody scattered, it's like, okay, now let's get back to the plan. He had a plan in the Garden of Eden. The seed of the woman's going to crush the serpent's head. And then within 10 generations, everything's off track. And it's like, okay, it's so wicked. He floods the whole earth, takes Noah, and says, okay, now I'll bless you, Noah. Fill the earth, and we'll work the plan through Noah. And now we get this far, and we get the Tower of Babel. He crashes that plan, doesn't destroy the building, but just confuses everything because man got together, and they're going to advance, apparently, so fast in their evil. Now remember, evil is not sin. Sin and evil are two different words. You can sin. Sin is missing the mark. Sin is rebellion towards God. Evil, yes, if you do evil, it's a sin, but evil is, in a sense, by itself, it is godlessness. You can do things that people would not consider sinful because they may be very socially correct, they may be very acceptable, they may be very kind, but they're godless. Their intention is to undermine God and his plan. That's evil. Satan even appears as an angel of light, indicating if an angel of light were to appear, it would appear as a goodness of light, of kindness, of, oh, this is, quote, good, but it is godless. Think of the things in our society. You can just go through and you can name them. We can take turns naming stuff off. That this is very good. Like, teaching children to read is a good thing. It's a good career. It's a noble. We're going to go into the inner city and teach children to read. But what are you teaching them to read? Godless material, things, you know, evolution and things of society that is deconstructing the things of God? Or are you teaching them to read and advance in the goodness of God and the goodness of his creation? So reading in itself is a neutral item, a subject, but if it's taught for godlessness, reading itself is evil. And it you know, that produces then sin. So, nonetheless, Tower of Babel is going to form this system, but man's evil is going to make it's godless, so God causes confusion, and now everybody's dispersed with their own countries, their own people, their own languages, and now it's like, this is right here, the re-engaging of the plan. You could say Adam and Eve, the seed of the woman. Okay, now you've got a seed of the woman, Cain and Abel. Cain kills one of the seeds. Okay, we'll move on. We got Seth. Now we're moving on here. Cain's line becomes corrupt. The whole world becomes corrupt. Have to flood it. Start over. Noah, we're going to start again. We're going to start with Adam. Then we got to start with Cain and Abel. Okay, now we got to start with Noah. Now we're at the Tower of Babel. We got to confuse that. Everyone's scattered. And now we're going to start with Abraham. Abraham, I'm going to do it through you. I'm going to work my plan. And so that's what's taking place right here. It's not just a collection of stories and legends and Jewish traditions. It is God following his plan and stopping evil in its tracks so that he can get this thing back on track. Nonetheless, God tells him, leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. And now here's seven things he says he's going to do. He gives Abraham three commands and then says, I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. That's two. I will make your name great. That's three. And you will be a blessing. Four. Then, verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, 5, and curse those who curse you, 6, and number 7, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And that is that right there, and the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. That is, in a sense, a restatement of the seed of the woman will crush the serpent's head. And then we had a derailment, the flood, the derailment, the Tower of Babel, and now Abraham. I'm going to do this for you, and because of you, all the nations that I created and had to scatter, all of them, ultimately, although I sent them into confusion, we're going to eventually bring them back and bless them through what I'm doing with you. He keeps, I don't want to say, makes it sound like God's failing, but he keeps trying to bring this plan of salvation, but it keeps being derailed by humans. And so this right here, all peoples on earth, all the nations that got confused are going to ultimately be blessed through what I'm doing with you. And so those are the verses we'll look at tonight. And then it goes, so Abram left as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Again, why? I would say that's because he's kind of taking care of him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. And that is almost like part of the fulfillment was already taking place. They came with possessions. While they're in Haran, they get more possessions, and the people they had acquired. Again, we'll talk about that here in a moment. But the people, that's going to be the people that are watching the flocks. They're taking care of the wealth and the possessions of Abraham. They're going to eventually manifest as a military, a police force, a security system that Abraham has, protecting all the things. Because everywhere he goes, we'll refer to it, he's just going to get richer. He's going to get more possessions. And it's going to include gaining people. And these people, he's not into slavery. He's not like capturing people and enslaving them because of their race. But he's going to need people to work for him. And so he's going to be bringing them on staff. He's going to be hiring some people. He's got a servant that's in charge of his whole household, Eliezer. But it would also include people that have probably no standing in society, no place in life except for, I'll work for you. And they are become, in a sense, a servant. They work for Abraham, and he gives them food and shelter. And they work for Abraham. He gives them food and shelter. Some people can call it slavery, indentured servanthood. America's just, days away from everybody being in that situation themselves. You work for the government, they send you a little bit of bread. You work for the government, they send you a little bit of bread. Soon it's going to be called citizenship, is what it's going to be called. But nonetheless, or not citizenship. Okay. That's where we'll get into that a little bit next week. Now, to start with, I want to turn the page and introduce this concept to you that, we're talking about it for the first time, but Abraham is going to be told to leave his land. He's going to be told to leave his people. He's going to be told to leave his father's household. And again, this is broad, the land. And then his tribes, or his people, and then his father's household. And each of those things contain something that he's given up. And he's going to be told to go somewhere else, and he's starting over. He's walking away from his inheritance. He's walking away from his culture. He's walking away from anything that involves the land, the people, the fathers. And remember, these people were scattered at the Tower of Babel because they tried to rebel against God. They became evil, had their own plan. The world at the Tower of Babel wanted to make their name great. They wanted to make their Shem Gadol. Shem means name. Gadol means great. Gadol Shem, a great name. And that would mean, and we'll see what that probably refers to, is the ideal is that they were going to make an impact and be influence and control the rest of human history. We will make a name for ourselves. Everything, again, Abraham is going to be promised God is going to make his name great. The very thing the Tower of Babel tried to do in an evil sense, God says, Abraham, come over here. I'm going to do it with you, but we're going to do it in my way. We're going to do it in a good way. Your name is going to be great, which means, and you can see how it's going to, I've got a list of things, mainly all the different people that come from Abraham, the different religions, the three major religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all call Abraham their father. So what God is doing right here, calling Abraham away from this, he's promising this is going to explode into, and you look at that chart. You can look at that chart right here. All those nations that come, you know, are coming from Abraham, all or many of the nations in the Old Testament are directly connected to Abraham. One of the things he's being called out of, and I think this is a slam dunk, he's being called out of a religious community that is worshiping idols, particularly the moon god Sin. Again, that word sin has nothing to do with sin or evil or rebellion towards God. That's just the way of pronouncing the moon god Sin in this land. Ishtar connects to this. The queen of heaven connects to this. And I'm going to show you right here now on page 2 of the notes that Abraham's family, Terah, Nahor, Haran, and probably Abraham's family, Abraham and Sarah, were idol worshipers worshiping the moon god. Perfect night to talk about this. When you're driving here, you can see the big white moon. I mean, that's important. I'm going to say it again. You can see the big white moon, the full moon in the sky. It's just it's real obvious. Okay, watch. Here it is. Joshua 24, after they come out of the land of Egypt, Joshua, way ahead in the book of Joshua, chapter 24, Joshua has them back in the land of Israel. They're actually right in this area, right here, between the Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, right where Abraham's going to stop when he comes in land. He's going to stop at Shechem right here and put up a stone. Jacob's going to stop there. Don't forget Shechem. Shechem's important. But Joshua's going to come back here. This is where he tells the people of the Exodus that has come into the land. He says, Joshua said to all the people, this would be 1406, 1405, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel. I'm on page 2 at the top. He says, long ago, and if it's 1406, about 600, 700 years ago, right here, 700, Abraham leaves Haran. So about 700 years ago, your fathers, Terah, lived beyond the Euphrates. See, beyond the Euphrates, it's on the other side of the Euphrates. The furthest Solomon's borders extended, and the furthest God promised borders would be up to the Euphrates. The land of Israel goes from the river of Egypt up to the Euphrates River. And Abraham started on the other side. He just crosses over, and that land is eventually going to be promised to David, Joshua. You can see all the promises. We'll read about it. We've studied it before. Your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates. Here it is, underlined. Terah, the father of Abraham, and Nahor, and they served other gods. They served other gods on the land between the rivers. Then I took your father Abram from beyond the river, from that land, from that people, from his father Terah's household, and led him through all the land of Canaan. And you'll see him stopping in the land of Canaan here in the next few verses. And made his offspring many and gave him Isaac. That same chapter, 24, verse 15. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, he's talking to the people that had come across the Jordan River after spending 40 years in the wilderness, and they're standing between Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal in this area. He says, now it's time to make a decision. What are you going to do? He says, if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, see, you think it's godless to serve the Lord, and you're going to follow your own gods, all right? Choose this day whom you will serve. And he gives them three options. Whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river, on the other side of Euphrates, you're going to go back to Terah and Nahor's day, or the gods of the Amorites. Now, the Amorites come from Lot, and they are now in the land, and they've got their own religious system. The gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we choose option 3. We will serve the Lord. So according to Joshua, Terah and the people Abraham's leaving were idol worshipers. And he was giving the people that time, they're still doing it. You can go back and worship them if you want to, but I'm not. I'm staying with this household. Now, Jacob, as you know, just like the Abraham's servant was sent up to get Rebekah to bring him down to, her, down to Isaac to marry, Jacob's going to flee to Uncle Laban, Beulah's son, Bethuel's son, and Rebekah's brother. And remember, Rebekah's brother, Laban, he's going to flee up there. But when he gets there in that household, it doesn't talk about it until the very end when they're getting ready after 20 years, he's getting ready to migrate back to the land of Canaan. He's got great possessions. He's prospered. He's got four wives. He's got 12 sons. He's got a daughter, Dinah. And he's on his way back. It says in Genesis 31, chapter 19, it's right here on page 2, Laban, Uncle Laban, Rebekah's brother, Rachel's father, had gone to shear his sheep. And Rachel, the woman that Jacob fell in love with and had to marry three other women to get her, and Rachel stole her father's household gods. Now, these household gods have two meanings, in a sense. Not meanings, but purposes. One, they do refer to titles to property. They are household gods. If you inherited the household god, you inherited the estate. If you could get the father's household god, that was like the title deed. This god is in charge of this, and now I've got the god I'm in charge of. So they were. It could be something as simple as she's stealing her inheritance. And to an extent, that's how she describes it. We got nothing. We were sold. I'm taking my inheritance. I'm taking the title deeds. But they are also, indeed, idols. So she steals the household gods, and that's going to come up here later. In fact, the next verse. Now, Jacob leaves with his children, his four wives, all of his possessions, his flocks, and heads back down to Canaan. And Laban goes in hot pursuit, especially when he finds out all of his grandchildren are gone, his daughters are gone, and his household gods are gone. So he goes in pursuit. That's chapter 31. And he's coming out of this very land. Again, remember, this is the very land. Laban is still living in the land that his father, Nahor, stayed at. So it's Terah, Nahor, Bethuel, Laban, and Rebekah. And Rebekah's gone down to live with Jacob, or Isaac. And Jacob's back in this land. So they're still practicing these gods. Here it is. He says, and now, after he catches up with Jacob in chapter 31 of Genesis, and now you have gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house, meaning Canaan. But why did you steal my gods? Jacob answered and said to Laban, well, the reason I fled, he's answering this two times, two parts of this answer. Why did you flee? Because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. You would take your daughters, which means you'd take my children. You'd probably take my possessions. You've cheated me for 20 years. I'm just leaving, so I've got something. And he is very wealthy. But concerning the gods, he says, anyone with whom you find your gods shall not live. If you find those gods here, they're going to die. Well, Laban goes through all the tents and finds nothing. And he says, in the presence of our kinsmen, point out what I have that is yours and take it. Now, Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. Jacob didn't know she stole them. As the story goes, he looks through everything. He doesn't find them. And Jacob says, she comes up to Rachel. Rachel, you know, she says, I can't get off my camel. I've got to stay seated because of that time of the month. And so you go, okay, fine. Well, she's sitting on the idols. She's sitting on the idols she's stolen. Laban doesn't know they're there. Jacob doesn't know they're there. I'm not sure who knows they're there. But she's basically pronounced a curse on herself. And Jacob says, there's nothing here. And so Laban had to go back home. They made a treaty, and that ended that story. But it comes up again a few chapters later, point C. Jacob buries these household gods in Genesis 35. Now, as time goes on, we're rushing through this story, but as time goes on, he's going to come back to Bethel. It's time for him to recommit to the Lord, the covenant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's going to commit. Again, these guys are not Sunday school kids. They're not your nice little boys and girls. I mean, these guys have, Jacob is going to fight and win this land from the Canaanites by force. He's going to win it with his sword and then give it to Joseph eventually. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Levi and Simeon are going to slaughter an entire city because that city, one of the men raped their daughter, or their sister Dinah. So these guys are, they're sword-carrying gangsters in a sense. And that's how they got to interact. Nonetheless, Jacob's going to come back to the Lord and make a commitment, and he's going to come here to Bethel. God appears to him. Somehow, God keeps appearing to these people. God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau." Okay, so again, we'll talk about that all, Bethel. So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, this is what his household, who's his household? It's his sons. He says, put away the foreign gods that are among you. They themselves, those 12 tribes of Israel, they've got foreign gods. Now, if they're the same gods that Rachel brought along and that she's handed them out, they've laid claim to them, or they've picked them up themselves, they've got foreign gods. Put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. Then let us arise and go up to Bethel so that I may make there an altar to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone. So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods that they had and the rings that were in their ears. Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree that was near Shechem. So on his way to Bethel, which is, you can see on the map, it's very close, it's within walking distance, he stops here at Shechem, digs a hole, and either hides them to come back and get them later, or digs a hole and buries to get rid of these foreign gods once and for all and get them out of the family. And so that is, again, the account of these people and where they had come from. Point two, I told you last time I was going to point this out to you, but this is the names of these people. You've got Terah, Milcah, who married Nahor, Abram married Sarah, Laban, who is Rachel or Rebekah's brother, Laban's Bethuel's son. Here it is. The names in Ur and Haran. The name Terah can be connected with the word Yara, meaning moon, and Yara, meaning lunar month. So Terah itself may mean, the name Terah may mean moon. The word T-E-R, Ter, or the beginning of the word Ter, is the divine brother and protector of Sin, the God. So Ter is another name of a God who's protector of the moon god Sin. Sarai means princess in Hebrew and is equivalent to Saratu, meaning queen in Akkadian, which is the name of the moon god's consort. And so Sin is the name of the moon god. Terah is the brother of Sin. And Sarah is named after, in a sense, the wife of the moon god. Nahor marries his niece Milcah, remember when Haran dies, which is the same as the name of the goddess Melkatu, the daughter of Sin. So the wife is Sarah, the moon is Sin, which his brother is Terah. He's got a daughter named Milcah, which that name comes from the daughter of the moon god, the daughter of Sin, who is the moon god. It is the Akkadian term for queen, and again the title of Ishtar, which is again throughout the Old Testament, Asherah. They're the same. Different gods at different times, or the same god at different times has a different form of name. So you could have Milcah, Ishtar, Asherah, and Asherah eventually becomes in fallen Judaism, or in the Israelite culture before they went in Babylon captivity, Asherah is the wife of Yahweh, and I've been in Arad, in the Negev, down south where Abraham's going. I've seen the altar and the stones of the Yahweh stone and the Asherah stone, where Yahweh, who now takes the place of the moon god, and his wife, which is the queen or Asherah, or daughter Milcah, it just continues. And they eventually end up in Babylonian captivity. And here I mentioned this earlier, Laban, the word Laban, the name Laban means white. And Lebana means the white one, which is a poetic term used in their writings to refer to the white full moon. So I just write down there, it seems obvious the Lord is calling Abram out of a culture that worshiped the moon god Sin. We've got Joshua telling you that they were. We've got Jacob going back up there to get his wife, and she steals the gods, brings them down. His sons are told to bury him here at Shechem before they go to Bethel and renew their vows. And all the people's names that are coming out of that territory all have, and archaeologically, historically, Ur and Haran, those two cities, Ur the Chaldeans moving into Haran, that the center of worship there, or the main god, is the Sin god, the moon god. So that is the culture Abram's being called out of. Bottom of page 2, just so you see this right here, Acts chapter 7, verse 2 through 4, Stephen is giving a sermon or a speech in the book of Acts. And Stephen's sermon tells us that God appeared to Abram in Haran. So you've got, here's the Euphrates River heading down this way. You've got Haran, you've got Ur, you've got Haran on the other side of the Euphrates, and then Abraham's going to cross and come down to Canaan. But Stephen says, quote, "The God of glory," that'd be Yahweh, second member of the Trinity, "appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia." Appeared to our father Abraham when he was in the land between the rivers, Euphrates and Tigris rivers. "Appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran." So he appeared to him here in Ur. Yahweh appeared, and I think that'd be the second member of the Trinity, appeared to Abram here and is going to speak to him. And I think that's what we have in chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, is what was spoken to him here. We'll see. "And said to him, go out from your land, from your kindred, into the land I will show you. Then he went out from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran." Genesis 15:7, God speaks to Abraham and says, this is coming up in the three chapters, God is going to now refer to this, "And God said to Abram, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to possess." So sometime later, when he's in the land of Canaan, in Genesis 15, God is going to appear to him again and says, you know, who are you? "Well, I'm the God who spoke to you here and brought you here from the land of the Chaldeans, from Ur of the Chaldeans." So anyway, that's how we begin our story. That's some references of what's going on. And now let's begin Genesis chapter... where are we at here on the, point 7, let's look at this very quickly. The command to go out from the, goes from the broad to the specific. It includes the land. He is told, get out of the country. This is from your land. Again, Tower of Babel, I talked about that. This is a particular place dwelt in by a particular people. You know, the land that they got scattered at Tower of Babel. The homeland is point 4 under 7a. I write, this homeland is Aram, Syria, what we've just been talking about, as will clearly be seen when Abram sends back to his place of his birth. In Genesis 24:4 and 24:7, Abraham describes the land that he's sending his servant up to get a wife for Isaac. He describes it this way, chapter 24, verse 7. "You will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but you will go to my country." And he was supposed to leave his country. So he, whatever country he left, the servant Eliezer is supposed to go back to that country and to my kindred. He was supposed to leave his people and follow God, and now he's going to send his servant Eliezer back to his people to get a wife. It's appropriate to go back and get a wife from his people as long as she comes down and lives with them in Canaan. But notice where he goes. It tells you in Scripture, go to my country and to my kindred. God told him, leave your country, leave your kindred, leave your father's household, and go to Canaan. Now he's in Canaan and he's telling Eliezer, go back to my country, go back to my family or my people. And where does he go? He goes to the Arameans. He goes up south to Syria. And then, of course, right there, write that down right there. Point chapter 24, verse 7. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, who spoke to me and swore to me, to your offspring, I will give this land. He will send his angel, and that angel most likely is a reference to the Son of God, before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. And so he sees Eliezer being led into Padan Aram, into Syria, the Arameans, by the angel of the Lord, who's going to bring back a wife for his son Isaac. And relatives, that's point B, that just refers to the family, the people. And father's household, it says, you'll see here in a moment, it says, get out of your country, go from your family, go from the house of your father. And the house of the father is the strongest of the bonds that provided social and economic life. Abraham is leaving his natural inheritance, his natural stability, for a promised inheritance. And ultimately, when Jacob gets to Padan Aram, he, in a sense, gets all of this back. When Jacob comes back from Padan Aram, in a sense, he's bringing with him all the inheritance Abram left there for him. He's bringing it all down with him to join up with Abraham's inheritance that he's gained. Okay, turn to page 4. Here we go. We got I missed a verse. Oh, that's what I was looking for that box. Go to page 1. Don't you hate to go to page 1 after I go to page 4? I just want to point out what you see right here. In the Hebrew, reading backwards, I'm just going to read the English. It's, you know, the direct translation. And had said Yahweh to Abram, get out. Now you can see that phrase, get out. It's underlined. There's two Hebrew phrases. Lech, lecha. And that means quick. That's a command. Do quick. Get out. Take action. Get out. You know, we in our Bible says go to the land. It's like, you know, when you find it convenient, go. It's like, go. Okay, when I get around to it, we'll pack. It's like, this is a direct get out. It's urgent. You saw what we saw. There were moon worshipers. Tower of Babel's just taken place. People have scattered. They've taken these gods with them. God's trying to find a place to represent himself in the nations. They're all gone astray. They've all gone after idol worship. Get out of this country. And I've got them in boxes. Get out in the square box of your country, and then the next box, from your family, the next box, from the house of your father. So get out from. I mean, you're leaving this behind. And then the promise, and to the land, Her Eretz is, again, the land. It is, they partake, not a land, anything. It's the land. I'm going to show you the land. So that's chapter 12, verse 1. Now to page 4. Chapter 12, verse 2. Now begins the series of seven promises God makes. I hope this doesn't become too monotonous and boring for you. I'll read, let me just read these four in this one verse. I've got them underlined in the Hebrew text and then numbered. The English Standard Version says in chapter 12, after he tells Abraham to get out of, you know, the land, the people, the house, the father's household, he says, now here's the promise. Now if you'll do this, Abraham's got, you get out. And by you doing that, God now says, I will. Meaning, you're not going to do this. You just do what I said. That's get away from these people, and then I'm going to do these things. And he says right here, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. And four, that's broken down in the Hebrew, and I will make you a nation great, and I will bless you. Two. Three, and make great your name, 3, and you shall be a blessing. So in the English, again, I'm not a language expert. I don't want to act like I'm correcting anything. But I do want to point out, you can read this smoothly in the English, and I'll make you a great nation. You know, I'm going to bless you. I'll make your name great. I mean, you're going to be a blessing. It's like, you know, just it's going to be good. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, it's not like this general statement. It's 4 things. It's, I'm going to make you a nation. You're going to be a great, great nation. And that's going to involve, eventually that's going to be redefined or clarified, a people, so many people you can't count them. They're as numerous as the stars, as numerous as the sand. So this great nation is not just, you know, great military, you know, or great, you know, economy. It's going to be clarified. You're going to become a great, your descendants are going to become so many. You've got an entire nation. I mean, I've got a big family. I got 6 sons. But, I mean, it's like this thing that there's someday going to be a nation, you know, the Galilean nation. It'd be like, you know, I can't imagine that. Now, Abraham doesn't even have 6 sons. He doesn't have 1. But he's going to become a great nation. The next thing, great nation, and I will bless you. Bless you. And we'll talk about that in a little more detail. Bless you, and it would involve 2 things. It would involve, 1, children or descendants, and it would include material possessions, and we'll talk about that. Now, see this? The great nation already covers the descendants. So this children, descendants, is up here. So when he says bless you, he means, I mean, you can study on your own, and you know, Abraham's just going to have, you know, nice mornings. He's drinking his coffee. The sun's coming up. He's just blessed being out here in the wilderness or the wild out here in the Negev. Okay. That's not, I mean, no, it doesn't mean, you know, some mental state. It means possessions. I'm going to give you children and possessions. Well, the children are referred to here in this great nation. So this bless you, I'm going to, and again, you can say, well, I'm not sure if that, well, I might be wrong. But from this point on, all you see Abraham doing is just like stumbling through getting possessions. He goes to, from Ur, he goes to Haran, and when he leaves, he's gained great possessions just being in Haran. He goes into the land, and there's a famine, so he goes to Egypt, and he leaves Egypt. Pharaoh gives him great possessions. Now he's with Lot, and him and Lot, they've got so much stuff. It's like they can't even contain it all. We got to split. We got so much stuff. So they've got to become 2 different groups of people because they got so many things. And he continues. Then Jacob goes up and comes back with all of Laban's stuff. And then Joseph goes to Egypt, gets all of Egypt's stuff. It's like, this means possessions. You make a great nation, and I will bless you. And then right here, and make great your name. Great name. And this is very interesting because this is exactly what the builders of the Tower of Babel and the city of Babel, we're going to make a great name for ourselves. If we all come together, in other words, we can set God aside and come over here and become evil and do exactly what God wanted to do. We'll do it our own way. We're going to make our name great in a godless, evil way. Again, don't just think sin, but just think without recognizing God's truth and God's reality, we're going to create the world in our own image. And God says, no, you're not. And when he says to Abraham, I'm going to make your name great, in other words, you're going to be the person that I move through and accomplish my purpose. Exactly what the Tower of Babel is trying to undo, I'm going to do it through you. And finally, and you shall be a blessing. He will be a blessing. So, in other words, this is not just so Abraham can conquer the world, just so Abraham can, you know, oppress everyone. You're going to be a mighty, great name. You're going to be a tyrant. You'll be a man like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before God, just a tyrant ruling over the world. No. Nimrod tried to rebuild what Babel failed to do, and it became a tyrant. He tried to have a great name for himself and have an empire in his, and all of his children would reign forever and they'd never forget him and his dominion. No, Abraham, you're going to have a great name. You're going to be what the tyrant wants to be, but you will be a blessing, which is, I mean, that's what is being said there. So here we go. These things broken down. 7 things are mentioned. I've got them listed there. but we'll come back to that. First, number two, the promise of land included a second dimension, which was a highly populated nation, or goy in the Hebrew. This would naturally include a political establishment, a common land, a common language, a common government. Now watch this point E, and what God began with Abraham, when does this ultimately come into this great nation? When does this actually take place? It doesn't happen during Abraham's day. All these promises are all these promises are progressive. Abraham doesn't leave Ur and then get to the land of Canaan. God says, put up a flag, claim it as your own. You're now king of Canaan. No, you're going to live here. In fact, one of the first things going to be said when we get here, I'm looking for the verse right now. It says, look in verse 6, if you got your Bibles, chapter 12, verse 6. When Abram does this, right away, there's two problems. One, you have no children, okay? Okay, that's going to be a problem. And you're old. It's not like you're a young couple. It's like you're old. You've had, 50 years to have children. So Abram, verse 6, Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. Again, I want to talk about that next week. Watch this. What did he notice? At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Oh, it's not like we're going to go to the moon and, hey, there's nobody here. Put up the flag. Look, we own the moon. It's like, you're going to the land I'm going to show you. You're going to become a great nation. Oh, great. I wonder where this is. I wonder where no one's ever gone before. No man has found this land. You know, Christopher Columbus. You know, Abraham's the original Christopher Columbus. It's like, oh, this is my land. There's Canaanites already living here. It's like Christopher Columbus. It's like, Christopher Columbus discovered America. But the Indians were living there. Again, I know it's a bad subject right now, but we can talk about that at another time. But nonetheless, he gets there. It's like, it's going to be your land, but right now, the Canaanites are here. So it's not happening. He doesn't become a great nation. Isaac doesn't become a great nation. Jacob doesn't become a great nation. He goes down to Egypt. Joseph rules in another nation. When does it become a great nation? When does this begin to take place? Moses, under the leadership of Moses, and I've got that written down there, point 2E, what God began with Abraham would be inherited and established with Moses, the lawgiver, and the founder of the political system, the religious, the cultural, the government. That's what the book of Deuteronomy is about, is that is the book of the law for the nation of Abraham. And so all this is just keeps right up. Moses simply inherits the Abrahamic promise, and there's a nation that's going to be born in that time. Okay, that's the first thing. The second, the Lord will bless or barak Abram. This word for blessing, I refer to descendants and material wealth. Since the first thing is fulfilled, it refers to, I spent a lot of time on that, possession. If you look at point 3B3. I write down the verses where he enters Canaan with possessions. Livestock comes from Pharaoh. Lot and Abram have to split. Abraham has a point four on the top of page 5. He's got a standing army. I mean, he's got a military, people that work for him, of 318 men who are on his payroll just to protect his stuff. I mean, I don't want to say I don't have any security cameras or anything, because that would put it online and everything like that. But I mean, I've got the police department, Abram had 318 men that when Lot is taken captive, he says, but just someone watch the stuff. I'm taking everybody else. We're going to war against four kings. Okay, that's another story. Chapter 21, the local chieftains testify to his wealth. Abraham's servant proclaims to Rebekah that Abraham, his servant, has a lot of stuff. You want to marry his son. You want to live in Trump Tower? Come be Donald Trump's daughter-in-law. That's basically the offer, except he probably got more stuff than Trump. The Philistines envy Isaac's wealth, and Jacob leaves Laban with more, and it goes on like that. Okay, the third one, the great name. The name in Hebrew is Shem. This is what the builders of Babel wanted. And here's the point three. Abraham's great name is seen in this way. He has a great name in his own time. He has a great name. Meaning the kings know him. In future nations and kings, I showed you that original diagram. His name is going to be great among the Ishmaelites. His name is going to be great among the Ammon and Moab. His name is going to be great in Edom. I mean, all these people. Who is your father? Abraham. So, I mean, every one of those circles, every one of those people on there, it's like, who is Abraham? He's our father. He's the father of Israel. Yeah, but he's also the father of the Edomites, the Ishmaelites, the Midianites, the Ammonites, the Moabites. It's like, so all the ites, when they come in and conquer the land, their father is all, you know, father Abraham had many sons. It's like, yeah, I mean, they're all fighting each other. I mean, and then Keturah has more sons and sends them off to the east. So in that sense, his name is going to be, where am I at? It's a blessing first. Okay, turn my page. Okay, name is great. In his own time, his name was great. Future nations would come from him. He's the father of many people groups. And I pointed this out, the world's three religions, they all trace their lineage back. Now listen, this was written, I'm going to say, you know, in the days of Jacob, in the days of Abraham. It was at least recorded in 1446 by Moses. It at least, you know, the worst case scenario, they created it in Babylon, you know, in the 500s, which I don't think they did. But nonetheless, you can't say it wasn't around when Jesus, this was written, because Jesus is referring to these things. So these things, at least, the greatest skeptic in the world has to say, well, these things were written down 2,000 years ago. And then you've got the scroll of Isaiah, you know, I mean, you've got, they're in the Dead Sea. I mean, nonetheless, I think these things were I think they're being happening right here on the time chart. But now, 2024, how great is Abraham's name? The Jews and Judaism claim him. Islam claims him. And the church, if it be the Greek Orthodox Church, if it be the Roman Catholic Church, if it be the Western Church, the Protestant, and all these groups, the Western world and the Eastern world and the Jewish world and the Islamic world are all coming together, but all the religions that are coming together, what do they all claim? Father Abraham. That's your world. That's your news right now. That's the news right now today. They're all coming together claiming Abraham as their father. But when was this said? It was said 2100 BC. It was said 4,000 years ago. You don't know if the Bible's true. I don't know if God's really controlling history. It's like, look at that. Your name's going to be great. And now today, in our world today, right now in the news, it's the descendants of Abraham and his religions that is having a still effective, still in active action. And ultimately, David's house, and then eventually the Messiah is going to come. And then that fourth one I said already, he'll be a blessing. It's a general statement, but basically, he's not going to be Nimrod. He's not going to be Sargon the First. He's not going to be a tyrant. He's going to become great, and Abraham and what's taking place in life is going to bless everybody. God says, I will do this. Now we got three things left that we got to pick up. I appreciate your patience as we go through this. I'll pray, and we're going to be done tonight. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the examples you've given us in Scripture of your own faithfulness, your own plan, and how you control and use your plan, control history to work your plan. We ask that we may be like Abraham, people of faith that obey, listen, and allow you to do the things you've promised you'd do. You've given us great promises and says you will do these things. Give us the strength to be standing at the right place at the right time to allow those things to take place in our life just as you promised. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.